I wanted to go back really quickly to review Luke chapter 18 and mention something that I don't want to fail to mention this as we look at this parable that Christ talked about. Luke chapter 18, because there were a couple elements in here, and I don't want to miss out on the most important element. When you see this parable, again, in some Bibles it might say, we remember it, at least I remember it, as the parable of the unjust judge. In my heading here, though, it says the parable of the persistent widow. And those are both valid points. There's an unjust judge. I mentioned that if you've been ever involved with an unjust judge, there certainly are unjust judges today, and there'll probably be a lot more of them. And that's why I know in this day and age, politically, many of the conservatives would like to appoint a more constitutional type judge that goes by the law of the Constitution, what was originally written. There are different interpreters to that. There are different interpreters also to the Bible that can cause some problems. And we've seen that through the years. So a lot of these things that were mentioned back in Christ's time are really nothing new to us. The persistent widow, obviously that's a very important point. That we persist before God, that we ask and ask and ask and ask and ask. And his point was, if the unjust judge finally gives in to answer this widow's prayer, how much more would Christ answer the prayers of his people, his chosen people? And that's really the focus on where he wanted to go with this. Not necessarily the widow, not necessarily the unjust judge, but the point on persisting and believing in God that he'll answer, because he's not an unjust judge. So that's why he says in verse 6, the Lord said, listen to what he said. That was the point. Listen to what the judge said. Shall not God avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him when he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find, if you want to put that kind of faith, that kind of belief that God will truly take care of this? He's going to take care of it. Right now we're in uncertain times. It's kind of interesting being in uncertain times, because I'm not totally used to being in uncertain times. Things were pretty certain when I grew up. Your dad would go to work, he would come home, you'd have dinner. It was like the same routine you knew was going to happen constantly. In fact, you thought it would really never end. And then time goes on. And you don't realize eventually things seem to be different now. In what way? Well, every time you go into a store or come into church, people are wearing masks. I remember the Sabbath that I came in here, because the Sabbath previous, nobody was really wearing masks. Nobody really said anything, but the next time I came here, I go, ooh, everybody's wearing masks. Things have changed. And now we're kind of adapting almost and getting used to it, not even knowing, when do we finally get rid of this? I look forward to that day for sure, just like everybody else does. It's a nuisance, but if it brings me to church with everybody, then so be it. You know, that's what we've had to kind of take a look at and wonder, what do we do? But some people feel very helpless, and we don't have to have that helpless feeling, because we've got a personal relationship with our Father in heaven and Jesus Christ. We can go to him with anything like this. Father, guide us, help us, you know, help us to deal with this, help our people to be all through the world, to be able to get to services. We can still come. A lot of people can't. So now New Zealand is pretty much okay right now. It'd be nice if the rest of the world was like that as well. Hopefully it won't last very long. But again, we know that hard times are upon us. And sometimes I think after all the years that we look at, including the times where the feast was thousands and thousands of people that couldn't wait to get there, and it wasn't really the luxurious times that we've got going to luxurious restaurants that we have. They basically camped out, and it was kind of wet sometimes. We don't always get that. We're used to having a lot of things and good things and having them when we want to. We've become a rich nation, and God warned Israel of that also. If you remember in Deuteronomy, goes, beware. When you come into a place and houses that you did not build, and you say, well, I built my house. No, actually, I didn't build my house. Well, we're paying for it now, but I didn't build it. We're in a rich country. We've got the luxuries of having what we do now. And when you get those luxuries, it becomes easy to forget the God who made it possible for us to understand what we're going to. But the now type things can take us in another direction sometimes. we can forget God and not be thankful. And see, by the way, we've talked about this for a long time, that times are going to come where it's going to get really hard for God's people. And it happened before, didn't it? If you read the book on prophecy, it's a great book, very good book written that we put out on prophecy. And it talks about Israel when they went into captivity. They never thought that that would happen. Judah never thought that that would happen. They were rich. They had the temple. They had God on their side. They were rich and bountiful. God had blessed them so much. But there's a time frame, and that really happened, didn't it? They really were taken into captivity. 718, 721, Israel, the northern tribes, were taken into captivity. We've learned about that. We even know their identity and who some of them are and how God's going to call them back toward the end time and establish Israel once again. Most of the world does not even understand who Israel is. They think that they're just the Jews. So there's an understanding there of what was back then, what took place, and what's going to happen in the future. So this is a forecast of what God's going to do. And all those scriptures, again, are going to be brought back at the Feast of Tabernacles as memories for us to remember what God has in store for us. And yes, we're going to have to deal with this, but our job, what can we do? We can pray and fast and draw closer to God, that our faith can be strong. Because again, the question is, when he returns, will he find this kind of faith? That's a question. And it's a question for us to ask as well. So we looked at Hebrews chapter 11. Let's go back there again really quick to look at this, because that's where you find this definition. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. The title today would be The Evidence of Faith. The Evidence of Faith. Where do we find that? Because without this, I remember the song that was just played, Suffer the Children. What was the point from that Christ was making? That without this element, that without this fruit, without this gift, without this characteristic in a Christian, we won't be there. Remember when he said, if you don't have the humility as this little child, you will in no way enter the kingdom of heaven. So it's a process, because all of us are at different stages of humility. I just read something the other day. If you want to have more of something, if you have to want to have more even of faith, then you're probably going to have more trials. So what's the trade-off? I wonder sometimes us in our thinking, we go, well, you know, I'd like to have more faith, but I really don't want more trials. I mean, God, please, I want more faith, so I guess give me more trials. That's a tough one. But don't worry, I don't think you even have to pray for them. Many times they just come natural, don't they? They come as we go through life. Somehow God's going to make sure that we grow as he's called us and he's preparing us. The author and finisher of our faith is doing something in our lives, and it's certainly not always easy. Sometimes all these unexpected things come up and we're faced with how do we deal with it? How do we handle it? So Hebrews 11 verse 1, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things that aren't seen. Verse 3, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. So the world says there's got to be some physical explanation for the origin of the universe, something concrete, something that can be seen. Some call it the Big Bang. It had to just blow up and things just happen. Sometimes we think about that, and every time again I watch one of these wonderful, beautiful productions, as we did with the Forensics last night, we watched the universe as it went out, and they've got these powerful telescopes. They're on the island of Hawaii, so they're up very high, and they're the most powerful telescopes in the universe. And they're looking at all these different planets. When they just found a planet, by the way, they found a planet. And it rotates around a star. Now, I'm not sure how all this works, but it's a planet that's about, I believe, about 10 times the size of Jupiter. Jupiter is the biggest planet in our solar system. I forget how many Earths can fit within a Jupiter, but there's a lot bigger planets out there in the solar system. And when you see that we're just a small part of the Milky Way and how vast the Milky Way is, and you take a look at that and they keep going and going and going and going and going, how do you not believe in a God? Or did somehow that just come into existence? And somewhere in there, there's Earth, the only planet that they can see right now that can be inhabited. Now, let me ask you this, because they're still looking. I could give them an answer and save them a lot of money, I believe. I'm pretty certain, I would say 99.9%, because of the humility factor, I'll take the 1.1 and say I could be wrong here too, because I've not been out there all the way. I'm not saying I know everything that God is doing, but I know as I read this Bible and see that he's got a plan and he placed man on this planet, I don't think there's other planets out there. I don't think you're going to find life forms. I've already found, well, you know, I know the baloney in Star Trek that they keep finding other peoples. And I know that's not accurate. I'm pretty sure that the God who made mankind on this planet, and this is where it's at, folks. You don't have to go anywhere else. This is where it's at. So somehow somebody wants to get in a starship and go out there and keep looking. I just don't have it in me to be in a starship for light years and not see rivers flowing and, you know, maybe through the visions and photography, they can have it on a TV screen, but there's no way that's like experiencing going to the beauty that's on this planet. It's just not there. Now, that's what we've got. That's what we believe. But other people, their minds are wandering. And they're going to find out one day, just as we know, there's a plan. And it's going to incorporate the entire universe. What in the world is that going to be like? Right now, we get to at least see it. We get to see parts of it because mankind has been given the ability to create, so we get bigger telescopes, which means we can see farther. And nobody yet, as I've said, has seen the construction cones that say work in progress here. We see it all the time on our highways. The farther they keep going, the more it keeps going. That's unfathomable, but yet it exists. So the Bible talks about a lot of these different examples of the examples of faith. Romans chapter 1:18. Romans 1:18, here's what the Word of God says, and we can see it all the time. For most of us that have been able to travel a lot, I think quite a few people in here have been able to travel to a lot of different places. Without the Feast of Tabernacles, we probably wouldn't travel like we did. You know, we've been over to Belgium, we've been to France, we've been to England. I know some people here have done Ireland. We've not been able to, love to go to Ireland, love to go to Scotland. We've been able to go to Australia, we've been able to go to New Zealand. We've been able to go to Jerusalem and through Europe and to all the different places and pretty much see the world. If I didn't leave Michigan, I might still be in Detroit. Who knows? You know, an old rusty hockey player, I don't know. You know, because God opened up our minds, we've been able to do all these different things. And not only that, but to look forward to it. God has given us the means. Our neighbor, I remember, asked, how in the world do you do this? How do you do all this travel? And then you have to bring up the concept of second tithe. You have to do that? Yes, we have to do it. And God commands us that we have to enjoy it too. You have to have a blast. He wants us to go buy whatever we want. Really? Yeah, that's the concept. It's just like, it sounds crazy to other people, the concepts of God. Romans 1:18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. You know, because they know better. They know better. How do you see the things that they do? How are you the commentator that's explaining all the things that these different creatures do and seeing that there's an order to the universe and then throw it on something else, that it just all of a sudden, it happenstance, something happened without really thinking that out? You know, there's an indictment on that, on people for that, because God has made it so clear. It says here, verse 19 says, that which be made known of God is made known to them, for God's revealed it to him. Because the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, because being understood by the things that exist. His eternal power and Godhead. His eternal power and Godhead. They see the power that's there. And probably God has gone, you ain't seen nothing yet. Somebody told me recently about the power that I guess now the Russians have built the most powerful bomb ever. And it's, I don't know how many times that of Hiroshima or Nagasaki. And God's going, I'll call that a lady finger in his mind. They've seen some of the power of God, but even as Godhead, how he works, how he functions, how he created the family, and how Satan has wanted to destroy that. You've seen that work in progress for a long time now. And then the unjust judges that come into play, don't they? Because they're the ones that say, by the way, we think that's normal. We think that's natural. And so God looks down and shakes his head. But it's part of his plan that's going to carry forward. Israel was taken out of their country because they went back against God. The same thing that we see happening today as well. Verse 21 says, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. See, humans want to bring God down to the human level. Neither were they thankful. Another important point, isn't it? Being thankful. But became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. You could watch it all the time. Again, I love these programs. The color and the photography is absolutely incredible. And they'll have the voice announcer, smooth voice announcer, pleasing voice to listen to. And then no credit goes to God. And this looks good. It looks wise. And no credit goes to God. Who exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creation rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. So be it. Amen. That's the way it is. So let's go to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. Look at this characteristic of which, same thing, when we look at the Bible and we talk about that characteristic of humility, you can't be in God's kingdom without that. But there's more than just that as well. And one of these characteristics is faith. And if Christ says, will he find it when he comes? That shows me that there's a danger and that that's going to be peeled away, even from God's people. So what can we do about that? Sometimes we can get so caught up in all the technicalities of what's going on in this world. Nothing like ever has happened like this before. And people are so caught away. I can find out right now what's going on somewhere just by a couple touches of a button here. A little bit of Facebook, find out what's going on over in Australia, over here, wherever it might be. All these things to take our focus away. Again, a lot of it can be used for good, but I keep seeing distractions. Do you? Distractions. Something is always happening. Because how do we go through a day and we just don't seem to get stuff done? I think that's the way really it's always been. But it seemed to be a slower society, at least some time ago. When I say a long time ago, it is a long time ago to some here. Were the 60s a long time ago? They don't seem like that to me. Just doesn't seem like that to me. You know, for those that maybe have gotten to watch some of the newer, the programs from old, if you remember like the Ozzy and Harriet's or whatever, some of the other programs as well, the Nilsson family. Do you know the woman used to wear a dress all day? I know some gals today would go, you're kidding me. The husband would come home and the wife do all her chores that she does, wore a dress. When my folks, I have a picture of this because so I know it's real still. When my folks had a party over and had some of their friends over down our basement, the guys all had suits and ties, and the women had dresses. What? It was a different time. It just was. There was a lot of good about it that we see. In fact, when you saw things on TV shows, even a husband and wife that were married, what was one difference that you saw? They slept in separate beds, even though they were married. That was interesting. Times have changed, haven't they? So, and we've watched them change, and they've noticeably changed to the point where wow, it's gotten to the point where somehow, somewhere, it started going over the line. And now sex is just regarded as, it's a free-for-all for anybody, isn't it? It's not something special that God created. And yet we see the difference. Hebrews 12, verse 1, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. That's the one, again, we're going to have to look at and overcome, where God expects the growth. We'll continue to plod forward. Let us run with patience the race that's set before us. See, this is the difference, where we can make a difference in our lives as God's people right now. Sometimes we may think we're handicapped. We are the least of the handicapped. If we're chosen by God and He's got a purpose for us, then every prayer that you say that goes to God is going to be heard, is going to be looked at, is going to be answered. Let's run with patience, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the crucifixion. So He gives this radical example. Because if we put ourselves in His shoes, what would it be like for us? Now, we've got a lot more examples than Jesus Christ, don't we? Because when you look at the book of Hebrews, you see people that went through, I mean, sawn asunder. You remember that one? It talks about people that were sawn asunder. How'd you handle that one? People that were burned at the stake. I mean, the evil times that were there, and it looks like those times are coming back. Because many of the Christians, when you didn't profess, when you didn't follow through with the mandate that came across going, you cannot worship on Saturday. And people were tortured if they did. That actually happened. And I try to think about the sanity of that. There is no sanity in that. You know, we've had the freedom in our country to basically express our faith in any way we want to with the freedom that we've had. But it's not always been that way, has it? In fact, Pilate looked at Christ and said, this guy didn't do anything wrong. I don't see any fault with him. Who's behind it? Do you think it was Pilate? Do you even think it was the Jews? See, we got something we see in the future that's going to come to pass too. We're looking forward to that. And that's the binding of Satan. That he's not going to be able to deceive people anymore. They're deceived. We understand that. We're trying to get the deception down from our eyes, wherever it might be. That's why it talks about Christ being the author and the finisher. It's not there yet. What percentage are we at with the element of faith? How faithful are we? How filled with faith are we? Because, you know, Satan tries to tear it down. The examples I gave a couple weeks ago, that's just circumstance. Is it really? All those things that have happened in your life that you can go all the way back and see what took place. You know, it's so interesting because as we saw evidence in our lives by a Feast of Tabernacles and different places that grew and were built, so interesting when you go back even to the plot in Pasadena where you had these buildings and you saw, if you look at the autobiography of Herbert Armstrong, you'll find some fascinating things that the man had a belief system and a faith that God was doing something. He had been revealed God's plan and God's holy days. And he believed that a college needed to be started because there needed to be a trained ministry. It all made sense. And when you saw what he did to get these properties at incredible prices, and what became of those, then what happened? It's almost like the same thing that happened when the temple was built all the way back to Solomon's day. We were rich. We had a rich church. It was incredible. Beautiful places in three different areas where people were being trained. A purpose was being laid out. But then what happened? Did we get too rich? Did we take things for granted? We had all these programs, didn't we? All the youth programs, all the YES and the YOU programs and all kinds of things. And see what happens? The rotation starts again. We're not as like we were back then when we had almost 150,000 plus people. But it was pretty nice. I still look back when I went to Pasadena and said, I stayed like in a, I think it was $16 million mansion. because the faith of a man that believed God wanted something done, and he did. I marveled at this. Take it for what it's worth in the what it's worth department. When you looked at the streets that surrounded the campus in Pasadena, one was Green Street, the other was Orange Grove, the other was Del Mar, and the other was South St. John. Now use that as an acronym. Green Street, Orange Grove, Del Mar, South St. John. And I looked at this campus and I said, that was God's. That was God's. He built that through a man, and he used it effectively for a while, until the finisher of our faith was kind of going, there needs to be something here. More lessons need to be learned. People are starting to take things for granted. They're just coming, and it's a place to go, and you've got YOU programs, but attitudes weren't changing. They were actually getting worse. Bad things were happening. So God allowed it to be shaken up. And a lot of us had different expectations, and sometimes we're kind of angry. I was angry for a while because I said, that's my stuff. I worked toward that and contributed toward that and was a part of that. That was mine. I had to realize, no, it wasn't. It was God's all along, and everything is God's. And he knows exactly what he's doing and where he's going. I just got to be along for the ride. And continue to do my part and not forget that. Verse 11, it says, now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous. I think we've all witnessed that. I know we got some here that just witnessed childbirth. I've never heard the women kind of go, yee-haw, that was a good one. It doesn't work that way, does it? But that example, what does it do? Why you guys smile after that, I have no idea. At least you're not Israelites that are murmuring and complaining after you go through a childbirth and kind of go, what in the world happened there? I don't want to go through that pain again. You continue to have more. It's like Doritos or something. But look what it does. Look what it does. Afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto those who are exercised. That's the way God made it, and he gives different examples sometimes, doesn't he? He shows different examples. Here I want to show you, here's a pretty difficult trial, but after you get through it, and wow, I like the times where after you get through it, because no one really likes going through it. But he talks about how to handle it with patience, with faith, with prayer, with fasting in many cases. That will bring us out of it sometimes a lot quicker, and it yields more fruit. It yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who are exercised thereby. So let's go over to Galatians chapter 5. We've looked at these, and all these are valid, but we're coming to this point here because faith here now is called a fruit. It's called some different things in the Bible, but if it's a fruit, then what can happen with a fruit according to the examples that Jesus Christ gives? It says the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5:22, is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against there is no such law. So you can have as much as you want. There's no such law. So faith. I hope some of you have witnessed people that are strong in faith. Sometimes maybe some would accuse them of being syrupy or using God out of their hip pocket because that's all they do is talk about God. And maybe that would make others feel not so good because they might be lacking in faith. I hope that doesn't happen. Because people that express their faith in God, I'm not going to doubt or criticize that. I hope it's there. But we're not in a competition with each other either. We're looking to build our faith to help others to build their faith as well. So when somebody shares their story to me, I'm not going to go, wow, that's just a happenstance. Oh, wow, that's pretty neat. You know, as I mentioned, that person standing next to me, I talked about angels unexpectedly. I feel that was, but I could be wrong. But it just seemed to be a perfect time for God to bring home a point. And when it says that in the Bible, it happens. That does happen. Maybe more than we think sometimes. God will bring an angel into our life. What are they, brethren, what are they for? You know, God talks about Michael, the archangel, who stands for the children of your people. So maybe that's happened more in our life, but we've just been busy with other stuff, getting distracted by other things to even notice what's going on around us sometimes. We talked about the stickers. People smile about the green stickers. Many remember that. Some don't remember that. As we went to the feast and put green stickers, you couldn't wait to get that green sticker to identify you, and somebody would pass you and toot their horn because, oh, there's their sticker. I know where they're going. Well, the joy that was there of just going to the feast and knowing that others were as well and that you could help each other out along the way. And then, of course, the murmuring came in for people who got orange stickers who they shouldn't be getting an orange sticker. We saw all those things happen. What did we do through that? We grew. You know, there was a time, I'll recount, this was before I was in the ministry, so I saw it happen. All these ministers used to sit at the front of the auditorium, normally on the right-hand side. And after we had our major blow-up, a lot of people were murmuring, saying all those ministers were getting the chief seats. They're all sitting down there. They all get their reserved seats, and we got to go scrounge and look for seats. I remember that. That word, maybe not everybody said that, but then I found out later, the purpose for that was if you needed to find a minister or your minister, you could go down to that section and you could find them. And you know what happened after that? So many ministers did not want to sit in a specified section anymore. They just did not. We'll sit up with the people. I don't care about looking for a seat. But, you know, if you're going to have to announce if you want to find somebody then or know where they're sitting. Maybe they'll say we're over here. But that kind of thing, again, it happens for the growth of God's people and even of God's ministry too. So we've seen a lot of these things happen along the way, and it's, thankfully, it's hopefully produced fruit, because it wasn't easy, was it? It was difficult. Difficult going through a lot of these things. So Paul said in verse 25, if we live in the Spirit, well, let's walk that way, which means we've got to walk the walk of faith. So we read that faith is a fruit of the Spirit. Therefore, the branches can be pruned in order to produce more. You know, the thoughts of a Christian could be, you know, in my life, I've learned that I don't have all the answers to life distresses, trials, and problems. Sometimes, have you ever gone to bed trying to figure out how to fix a dilemma? How to fix a dilemma? You know, sometimes there are physical things that I've tried to figure out how to fix. Those aren't as difficult. Sometimes I'd have to sit back. I'll have to watch. Sometimes people are a lot better than me at doing that kind of thing. Well, how do I fix this? And there might be skilled tradesmen or laborers out there. I'm still figuring out how to fix a door because it's leaning over to one side. And I finally got to a guy that's been in the business for 17 years, and he's explaining to me how to do it. He sits for 10 minutes telling me, I can't remember a word that he said. I'm going to have to go measure everything, and I still don't know how to get that door fixed. What is it that I'm supposed to do now? I've heard of shims and everything else, and that's purely physical. Now, it's fun. It really is enjoyable if I get to that point where, oh, I can fix that now. There's a couple of things you can do. But now when it gets to the mental and spiritual things, that really gets hard. When you see maybe a Christian, a fellow Christian that's hurting or that's suffering or that's going through a trial, what can I do? What can I say? How can I help this person? That really takes the help of God. That really takes the inspiration of God, because it's a spiritual thing. Sometimes if we just want to blab out what comes to our own mind, that might be the exact not thing to say. Have you ever said that? I think we've all had our share of doing that plenty of times. That's where they came up with the proverbial foot in the mouth statement, saying the wrong thing. And sometimes we've all said right things and good things and positive things, and that's been good. Did you ever learn to handle a problem without as much emotion as you used to have? I found out sometimes with children, the more that you would yell or speak up, the less impact it would have. It would actually push away instead of encourage. So we can still say, we can still be, you know, th- thinking the right thing and meaning what we mean, but I don't know if Christ ever yelled. Did he? You know, he might have been stern, but as far as yelling, because there was a kindness about him. There was a gentleness. He was filled with patience. I'd like to react like that. And we get practice all the time. As I said, when we're driving, if you're watching the news, how do we react to that? Take a deep breath in, folks, because you can't do anything about it. Sorry. What do we all do? Mr. Frank said, let's all go march on Washington, and we'll have Church of God Day. It won't be near the Million Man March that they might have, but will that do anything? And is that what God expects of us? What did Christ do? Yeah, just almost in a sense, a sheep to the slaughter, didn't he? He knew what was happening, but we do too. So it's up to God to show us what to do. But that's the faith element. That's where that's in there. That's according to what you are thinking and what you believe. And we're all different in that. And we're all growing because we have different measures of that. I have learned that I don't have all the answers to life's distresses, trials, and problems. I may not understand the whys. Life's trials may hurt deeply, and we may be perplexed at times because we're human. But I refuse to doubt God. That's got to be ultimately the element in our lives, that when he called you, that if he's the author and finisher, that's where you go. That's really where our answers are. They're not in magazines, they're not in Facebooks, they're not in texts, they're not in anything else that you can find, but simply a relationship, a personal relationship with God that you can rekindle every day and grow in every day. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8, Paul puts it this way. So here now we have recently a up-to-date, full-fledged crisis and trial. And I've watched, and maybe you have too, people react to it in many different ways. I've seen good things, and I've seen disappointing things that have been mentioned, that have been said. I think the basic thing is to be as encouraging as we can, because some people are struggling through this. So I've learned, rather than give a quick criticism back to something maybe I don't like, hold my peace, pray for the person. That we all would come through this with the focus that God all wants us to have. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8, we're troubled on every side, yet not distressed. Is this troubling? Yeah, it is. I've never had this happen in my life, and I can say all of us are on the same page. The young and old are all going through this now. So it's something that's, we're all doing this together. We're all having to look at this, having to, if you want to call it, battling it, trying to deal with it. So it's troubling, yet we're not distressed. It says we're perplexed. This is perplexing. It really is. I've seen so many arguments about this. It's perplexing. Well, if you wear them now and it hangs around for 3 hours, then what's the whole point that somebody would say? I don't even know all the facts on it. If I hear this over here, then I hear that one over there, but it's something that confronts me and I've got to deal with it, so what do? The best that I can do. That's all we can do. The best that we can do. And what is that? It might be different for you than for me. It says persecuted. Now, we may have had that. I don't know of anybody that's in total persecution like it may be in the future, like many of our fellow brethren have gone through before. But I still remember the stories as I brought you back. We try to bring it up to modern day times when we're talking about what happened to Israel. You know, when the Assyrians, eventually God allowed the Assyrians to come in, and they were mean people. And they did some really awful things that's been done throughout history. People being impaled, all those different things. Ultimately, you saw what the Romans did in Christ's time when they did crucifixions and tortures and things of that nature. But, you know, we haven't seen those persecutions, did? But I do know, looking back, that there were an amount of people, I don't know how many, I don't know if we can see in history, but all the time when they were taken into captivity, there were always a people that were taken captive, weren't there? Remember? I wonder if those were the people that actually cared about their country. I care about my country. That's why it hurts so deeply. I remember being in a country born as a baby boomer in 1957 and watching what's happening to my country as I saw what happened to my church as you saw the same things. But now I realize it's all for a purpose as well. And if that speeds God's kingdom and that's what happens, that I'm on board. I just have to trust and have faith in God. So see, as it gets worse, and you and I grow stronger in our faith, these things are not going to bother as much because we're going to expect them. And we also see that God can deliver us, as he did all the way back to the Israelites, Jews that were taken into captivity, and sometimes given high positions, as we see from the testimonies of the Bible too. So yeah, they were taken into captivity, and what a lot of people don't know, and they really put this down, is the identity of how God took these scattered Israelites through Europe and how they all got planted in different areas. And out of all that, you get what we believe today are Ephraim and Manasseh, just two of those that we can really identify. Some say we got it mixed up or straight. I don't think that really matters totally. But out of that, you got two huge, powerful nations. And one that used to exist before some people's times here, it said the sun never set on Britain. Sun never set. They are occupied throughout all the world. Did they do mean things? Yeah. Were they all righteous people? No. But God had a plan. And he even says, despite that, I'm going to set up a plan and this is how it's going to get. And ultimately, we see things being done because God had a purpose and there was going to be a gospel that was going to be preached. And the main focus of that was going to be right here from the United States. It's so interesting to see these 100,000-watt stations out of Cincinnati. I remember talking to a guy after our really big split. We wanted to get back on radio again. The guy goes, I remember that man. They used to listen to him. 100,000-watt station. A lot of people remember driving down the road somewhere. He used to be driving, and the thing you turn on at the time was the radio. And at night, people would pick up this broadcast. And today, if you ask somebody that talks to you about the church that you go to, instead of trying to remember all the names all the time, just go, hey, do you remember the Plain Truth and this guy named Herbert Armstrong? Believe it or not, you may get a lot more positive. I just have not yet gotten a negative response. Oh, that guy. Never gotten that. I remember that people are going to have seen that. They heard something different. And I got to listen to that too. The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Herbert W. Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow. And greetings, friends around the world. Stoller kept you just time after time after time. You remember that. And I don't want to forget the purpose that he had and what God is doing. It was just so intriguing and different. Now, I never thought it would progress the way it did. Through the good times and through the bad times, and we're still here. Is that awesome or what? So many people that have left, so many ministers, and you and I are still here. There's got to be an element of faith into that, that God is working out a purpose, and we get to be an incredible part in it. We're cast down, but we're not destroyed. We're still here, as he said. Verse 13, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, we have the same spirit of faith according as it is written, I believed and therefore I have spoken. We also believe and therefore speak. Hopefully at this time you can speak up for what you believe. You can give answers for that. I still have got some interesting answers to give to questions that have been brought my way. I'm a little bit, in a sense, I want to use the right word, perplexed. Because I'm not despairing. And some of the questions that are asked that just really veer sometimes from what the Bible accurately says, people are still just piecemealing the Bible instead of putting it together like they should. But it is a growth process. So I've learned also to be patient with that. God, help me to put together an answer that will help this person. Now, maybe it won't, but at least I've done my part to try. And you and I can do the same thing wherever you might go as God gives us those opportunities. The same spirit of faith. Verse 14, knowing that he who raised up the Lord Jesus will raise up us also by Jesus and will present us. We will be waved before the Father just as Jesus Christ will. Now, again, I can't even fathom what that will look like. You know, to take a ride through the universe, that's one thing. Because as you're riding through, you'll notice all these incredible different planets and how huge they are. And you go, well, I can't go to that one at this time. I can't go to that one. You're passing them on by. Can't stop at that stop yet. But how will that be once you get to the point where you're able to travel through the universe and breathe in space? What will that even be like? I can't imagine. I do like to think about it sometimes because that exists out there. God is going to do something with that. So what will it be like when you and I are presented before the Father? It's almost a jealous feeling. You know, when almost all of the family of Mrs. Waddle was there at her graveside, and they all knew what's going to happen to her. You know what it produced? Peace. There's just a peace in the knowledge of knowing what happens. And there's nothing like it. It produces a peace, and it produces a comfort of knowing the outcome. And all this, by the way, is going by so quick, as you know, too. What was your first feast? We can probably all talk about our first feast. I remember I was listening to the Carpenters on the way. It's the 70s. A lot of different details we remember about the Feast of Tabernacles. And good and bad situations. Not always, you know, some problems that would arise, but for the most part, great memories. And all of these things we can encourage, and we can see these things because it's the same spirit of faith. Verse 15, it says, for all things are for your sakes, that the abundant grace might, through the thanksgiving of many, redound to the glory of God. For which cause, which purpose, we faint not, but though our outward man perishes, you can feel that every day, some of us when we get up or try to just get up from a seat. You notice the groaning that takes place. I noticed that. If I can just share a quick example. I know we were all of a sudden got the badminton set up when we went over to the Baker's farm one time, just a couple of weeks ago. And we played badminton. Four of us played badminton. You know what I remember? All the groans. Because the, oh, ah, oh, we could just record that. It was so funny. I think I used to be able to do that stuff and not make any grunts or groans. But you try to lift something up, just a natural groan comes out because something is probably hurting in the body. And yeah, we smile at it. It's kind of funny because that's the way it is, isn't it? I don't know if it's going to get any better. We can try to help it sometimes, use some liniment or whatever, do some stretches. But that's what happens. And that what says, though the outward one perishes, the inward is renewed. Isn't that awesome how you can get up and look at something totally different? Maybe the day before you were down, depressed, you pray to God, ask him for the faith and the strength, you get up and go, wow, the problem's not gone, but my outlook on it's totally different. I'm fine, I'm okay, because God, you promised to take care of it. Show me how to deal with this. That's faith. That's the belief that God is going to help you because he cares. He doesn't like, do you like to see anybody suffer? I don't know anybody with God's spirit that would like to see somebody suffer. He doesn't like to see anybody suffer either. Now, if he allows suffering in a Christian, then it's for a growth purpose. Because he sees it. Every breathing moment of our lives. Verse 17, it says, for our light affliction, which is just for a moment, works for us a more exceeding eternal weight of glory. Why, we look at the things which are seen, not at the things which are seen, but at the things that are not seen. Why do you think sometimes it is why we rejoice in the feast so much? Out of all the feasts, why do you think it is? Because we're going on a kind of a vacation or something? That it's always a joy to visit some places and to get away for a while, but I really believe that when you're exercising the Spirit of God, you're going to have a joy there that just wells out. That's why you can get the feeling normally at opening night. It's going to be there again. But there's something that God gives to his people through his Holy Spirit from that one experience there. That's not just that one. That it's the real one. It's the real one that's going to be on the scene. You know, for years I've said, you know, that was a great feast. I hope we get to the next one. And now we're at the reality of maybe not making one, because we got fighters here. They're all going, oh no, we're going to the feast. We're going. That's awesome. But what if it comes to one day that you'll get persecuted if you try? What happens then? Is that possible? Was this possible? That we've got to break up into A and B? First time ever in the history of the Church of God, we got A and B groups going to the Feast of Tabernacles. Who would have ever thought? But yet, here we are. And stay tuned. Because I believe God gives us little doses so we can grow in faith and be able to handle the more difficult ones. We're looking at the things that are eternal. If you want to be a dreamer, like Mr. Armstrong was, to have that vision that went beyond buildings, wasn't about buildings. Do people think that he wanted to create some kind of wealth for his magnificence and he left nothing? Didn't take paychecks at times. Yes, he flew in a very nice jet, and we could afford it. So a lot of things were learned through that. But don't judge the man because he had a nice jet. Because frankly, he didn't look at it as his. Everything that he looked at belonged to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 1. 2 Corinthians 5 verse 1. For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desired to be clothed upon with our house which is from heaven. Now you have to have that kind of focus. Don't forget to be able to really see that. Because the hard part about it is when we have such nice things. Nice things, by the way, which always somehow need to be fixed. Some people here once had a new car. It's not new anymore. New cars don't last very long. I like them. I even like a partly used, put 17,000 miles on it, 20,000 miles, and it looks brand new to me. Still feels new. Just does not last. Wheel bearings go out. Oil changes. We really experienced that this past week on all the cars. One wheel, there it is. I could feel it. The wheel, there it is, going out. So I got it replaced. Made the same exact noise. I could feel that. I could feel it through the steering wheel. So I ask, is it possible that the other bearing could transfer a noise? Yes, it was possible. And it was that wheel bearing. So kind of a costly error, but you learn through it. But you just realize stuff doesn't last, does it? You can enjoy it for the moment. And which is a good thing, which is fine, and God wants us to do that. But again, if it takes away from the focus toward the real things in the future, then that gets to be where the problem is. We can get easily distracted. Verse 4, it says, for that we are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened, not for that we might would be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life. Now he who wrought for us the selfsame thing is God, who also has given us the earnest of the Spirit. That's that begettled, that we know. Wow! That element right there that you realize, when God started working with you, we know how that even works. You can explain that to people, how it works, the Holy Spirit. No, God brings you to understanding through giving to us his Holy Spirit. You can explain that as easy as you can the human spirit. When a baby is born, baby starts to learn. In fact, I marvel at that. I laugh at that. You know, why do we keep encouraging the little kid to walk? Because as soon as you do and he walks, you're in trouble. It's just caused you more problems. And the more information that you give him, it creates more problems. Just doing a little education here, which you already know. Because everybody finds that out if they don't know it anyway. But I laugh about it. Oh, come on, he can walk now. Oh, great, where is he? And all the things that you're given more knowledge. We're given more knowledge. So you can compare that then to the spiritual, which is way above that. But he gives us the begettle. He works with us through his Spirit, which he said to the disciples, it will be in you. And it's in them, and then it's growth process. So you start to learn, and you see how you were in the church way back then when you first started, and a lot of stuff I didn't know. And it's wonderful to have godly knowledge if we use it appropriately, but we can also use that in the wrong way too. Having some knowledge, go, look who I am around here. No, that's lack of humility there. Now we got to balance all this together, and it's process, and we all grow. We all grow, and we're supposed to be praying for each other, not condemning or judging each other. Verse 6, therefore we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and present with the Lord. Wherefore we labor that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. That's the whole point. We can't be there right now, but we're praying for that time. And oh, I can't wait. The more I think about and the more I talk about, I can't wait to see what you all look like as spirit beings. How we're going to just crack up. You look like that now? Marvelous improvement. We'll all say that. But it's so hard sometimes to grab onto it unless you talk about it. And that's why we bring up the Feast of Tabernacles. What will it be like? No, we don't know all things. But just to get those little sips at times that we can taste of the kingdom of God that make this life, whatever we go through, the hardships, so worth it. Especially when you know what God has for you. So now the disciples and apostles had to learn where faith comes from. Matthew chapter 17 and verse 14. Matthew 17 verse 14. Where does it come from? And something happened here in this incident, Matthew 17, where Christ again used it as a teaching tool. Verse 14, when they had come to the multitude, there came to him a man kneeling down to him, saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he's a lunatic, sore vexed, for he often falls into the fire, often into the water. Now, we've not seen this probably in our own lives. I've seen a couple that were close on this. We're bored, maybe not this bad. But demons are out there. We understand that. Satan, again, powers this society, and he has demons. And so they've got influence. If you haven't felt that, been around it, then you've got a nice hedge about you, which is good, and I believe we did, because the example is in Job, remember? How you can't touch him. No, you can't. And Satan can't touch you, and the demons can't touch you either. But you might, maybe in the future, that might come out more. It's out there. They're out there. But this happened in that time. It says, I brought him to your disciples, and they couldn't heal him. Now, that was interesting. That must have been an ego trip for them, if you know what they had gone through. Because later on, you know what happens later on in this chapter? Exactly that. Oh, what are you talking about? We're talking about who's greater than each other. So this was a hit on faith here. So Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long will I be with you? How long will I bear with you? Bring him to me. Now, when it says, O faithless and perverse generation, was he talking about the kid? Was he talking about the father? Or was he talking about the disciples? It says they couldn't heal him. Why? Why couldn't they heal him? He knew that they were in a process. But he was talking about their lack. And when he brings examples to us, will he find faith when he returns? That'd be my question. Will he? And I've got to look at myself in the mirror, ask, will he? Will I be there? How many times has Satan unleashed or at least attitudes on any of us to cause us to doubt? There are different ways that he works. And some just don't understand or realize that when they come out with negative statements or unthankfulness or whatever, stop. Is that an attribute of God? Are you justified in saying that because you don't like the decision or the outcome? So we get these examples all the time. So he says, oh, faithless and perverse generation, how long will I tolerate you? How long will I bear with you? So he rebuked the devil and he departed out of him, and the child was healed from that very hour. So they came to him. Do you notice it says separately? You know what that says to me? Still an ego trip. Why didn't you come to him collectively? We couldn't heal him. Hey, why couldn't I do it? You know, I thought, I one of the favorites here? That, by the way, that's where they got, really had to bring him through a lesson before they got into the service aspect to see that it was not about them. Why could we not cast him out? He goes, because of your unbelief. Wait a second. You would think that they had some by then, didn't they? They had some. There's no doubt about that. They had some belief. They did have some faith. They saw him do all these things, all the different things. So they had belief. And even Christ told them, you'll be able to do a lot of these things. But they couldn't on this one. Why? What would you say to that? Why? It kind of answers that in a sense. Because he says, number one, because of your unbelief, for verily I say to you, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you'll say to this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it will remove, and nothing will be impossible. And that phrase right there is just so hard to grasp and to comprehend when he uses the smallest seed in the entire world as an example. If you just had that small of faith, you know what that tells me? There must be a smaller seed. I don't even know if I've got faith as a mustard seed. Because if I had faith as a mustard seed, I could tell the mountain to move. So what's that all about? Or what kind of faith do we have? Do you believe when the time that we come and we're going through the really hard times that God will actually, that he does know? Can you always say God always knows what's going on at any time or situation? It's just up to me to find out where my part is in this. And how do I react as a Christian that I can please God? And by the way, it says without faith, it's impossible to please him too. So that's got to be an element that's in there. He says, however, this does not go out by prayer and fasting. So, do you remember when I just went to the one that talked about the casting off the heavy burdens and the sin that besets you in Hebrews? And it talks about that in Isaiah. How did it say you get rid of those? Same thing. Prayer and fasting. So now Mr. Franks says this in his letters, and I'm hearing it saying it all the time. He doesn't say, brother, we've got to pray about this. He says prayer and fasting because he knows that these are more difficult times that we're in. Thank God for the wisdom to be able to say that. He's saying it. So when people are saying, well, what could I do? No, we're not going to march on Washington. We're going to pray and fast because we know that God rules. He controls all things. Nothing goes by without him understanding and seeing what's going on. Can you imagine what may have happened in this case? It seems as though the disciples had been performing certain miracles and they had now come upon a situation where God allowed them to be tested. And what was going to happen out of that, which was done because you saw what did happen with them, they grew in faith and strength. And they eventually did lay their lives down and they await that first resurrection to where they're going to be used powerfully by God. And we even know how with they. We don't know how specifically with the other first fruits, but with them we know that each of them is going to be over a tribe in Israel. What's that going to be like? So I'll end here in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 6. 2 Timothy. And I'll close with a story here too. Because I said before, it's not just humility. And frankly, it's not just faith. We're focusing on this right now. But even with that faith and strength that comes from God, you can't stir it up. You can't breathe in and out and get more of it. It's through enduring the trials of this life and our constant connection with God that we're going to really learn the lessons. But it is through God's grace, his favor and his mercy, because he called us and selected us. He is such a kind and gentle God. So sometimes we get so hard on ourselves, we got to realize God's grace and mercy in our lives as well. Even Paul brought that out in Ephesians. He says it's by grace you've been saved, but that's got to go together with the work. So I'm going to use a little baseball game here in this one. I thought that was an interesting story. It says Johnny and God were watching a baseball game. God's team versus Satan's. The good team was up to bat, bottom of the ninth, two outs, tied at zero. The first batter to come up was named Love. He swung at the first pitch, line drive up the middle, base hit. The next batter was named Faith. The pitcher tried to throw a few curveballs and changeups, but Faith remained focused and also got a single. The third was named Godly Wisdom. He watched his pitches carefully and he walked because Godly Wisdom never swings at what Satan throws. That was interesting. So the bases are now loaded. God looks over at Johnny and said, "Here comes the star player. Up to the plate comes Grace." Johnny said, "Well, he doesn't look like much." Satan's whole team began to laugh. Satan thought the game was in the bag. He threw the first pitch. Grace connected to everyone surprised and launched a rocket to dead center. Home run, game over. Then God asked Johnny if he knew why Love, Faith, and Godly Wisdom could get on base, but he couldn't get the win. Johnny answered, "No." God explained, if your Love, Faith, and Wisdom had won the game, you would have think you'd done it by yourself. Love, Faith, and Wisdom can get you on base, but only Grace can get you home. Really kind of neat analogy. And we do realize that in the balance. We're striving for all these things that are so incredibly important. And God says, without them, you can't make it into the kingdom. So how do you get the balance there? See, the world says none of those work. You know, the works are totally out. No, they're not. They go together. Abraham believed, and it says it was counted him for righteousness, and he did something. He didn't just sit back. But here's our dilemma, modern day age. What do we do? What do we do? Do we get the old protest things out? How do we deal with this? There's an answer that each of us individually can figure out through God's help. It can be a faith issue. With some people struggle differently with that, so I'm not going to say it is or it isn't, but it could be. So each of us, as we listen to the different messages that come out, have to apply these messages to our own life and see, what is there something that I'm lacking here? Otherwise, you know what it becomes? I come to church and I do the church thing and go home and nothing ever changes. I would hope out of that, this, somehow, understanding a little bit more about messages, you know, about faith. You've heard this hundreds of times probably. But are we the strongest in faith? Can we identify with how we can grow in faith, because it's something that we can grow in? I'd like to be a lot stronger in faith. I'd love to be able to move some mountains. I'd love to be able to part some seas. I'd like to be able to resurrect from the dead. That would be an awesome one. And I would really try hard not to take the credit. You know how dangerous that would be for an individual when God allows something like that, when you see the power of God in action? I certainly would be in awe, but I wouldn't want that to go to me. You remember the story in Acts, where eventually they heal this cripple that's lain there for a year. They knew it. And Peter says, "Why do you look at us as though by our power and might?" But they did it. They had more than faith of grain of mustard seed when you could do something like that. And this cripple guy that's been laying there is jumping up and down like he just took gymnastics classes for 2 years. Those people saw the wonders of God. Here's what's going to happen. Always like to bring it up in the future. There's going to be negative things and negative miracles, as the Bible calls them, in the future. I don't know what that's going to look like, but there's going to be other miracles of God as well. Where will we fit in with that? Would you like to be used strongly by God? I hope so. And you can do it by your contact and connection with God. But it requires doing things. It requires that strong connection with God. So let's be about that. And it's, as it says in 2 Timothy 1 verse 6 as we end here, it says, stir up the gift of God that's in you. That gift of God that produces the fruit of faith.